The Last Command, part of the Starman series, www.starmanseries.com. Copyright 2005 by David Bauman, John Cooper, and Mike Dodd. Chapter 8, Spawn of the Stars. For long minutes, the Starmen were aware of nothing other than the ultra-comfortable sensation of high-quality wormhole travel. They could feel each other's grip, but had no sensation of anything else. No feel of a floor beneath their feet, no awareness of a wall or tunnel, no sense of weightlessness, yet no pull of gravity. All around them was a dark gray oblivion that conveyed no sense of distance whatever. They could have been inside a thick and wrapping fog or adrift inside starless infinity. With a disciplined effort, Zip brought his mind into a place of peace so that he would not give way to panic. "So the janitor travels via wormholes," he thought. "Indeed, yes," answered the janitor. As always, when the janitor communicated, there was a measure of mental discomfort. "There are only two ways to cross interstellar distances quickly, Starman Foster, through wormholes or by tachyons. Tachyon travel is complicated and requires more apparatus, so we of the first races reserve that method for special needs." "How do you travel by wormhole without any apparatus?" queried Zip, directing his thought toward the janitor. "There is apparatus," came the answer. "I create the wormhole with a small device located inside my suit. Then I ride its wave as if following a wake, so that the journey can begin even as the wormhole is being formed. We are traveling a long way to reach my home planet, so we shall be inside this wormhole for yet a little longer." "How far away is your home planet from our solar system?" "My current home planet is more than 57,000 light-years away from yours," replied the janitor. Once again, Zip drew his mind away from the brink of the mental abyss that opened in front of him. He waited patiently. Suddenly, the foursome arrived. The grayness of wormhole travel vanished, and the Starmen found themselves on a world unlike any they had ever imagined. Almost reluctantly, the Starmen released their grip and stepped apart. Their quartz-screen helmets darkened by several levels the instant they were exposed to the sunlight of the janitor's world. A double white sun blazed down through a white sky onto topography of an alien magnificence, and several dozen stars shone brightly in spite of the supreme brightness of the sunlight that irradiated the landscape. "This is astounding," observed Mark, his voice reflecting the awe he felt keenly. "A world from the dawn of creation." "This is," began Joe as he gazed around at their surrounding, it's indescribable." Off to one side were structures made of glass or some similar compound connected with earth-colored metal lattices. The foursome stood in a courtyard with the natural terrain of the planet rolling away from them on three sides. The world was a soft place of smooth, ruddy plains and orange hills of rounded corners. In a few places were clusters of sharp objects with fine edges and even spikes. Many of the hard places shone and glittered like mirrors. "Yes, it is mica," the janitor answered the unspoken question that arose in the minds of the Starmen. The mound upon which the buildings were situated flowed down to another level. Some of the hills in the distance glowed muted red with saffron highlights. Meandering through the plain was a dazzling river, yellow in the places that reflected sky and orange where the images of the hills appeared. "It is sulfur," explained the janitor. "There are sulfur falls a mile or so upriver, beyond sight. If you wish, if time permits, I will take you there, though I suspect that you will want to continue your passage to Luxa as quickly as you can." "You are correct," affirmed Zip. "I'm sure that the falls are beautiful, but we cannot delay." Mark felt an intense desire to see the terrain of the planet, but realized that Zip was taking the wisest course. As the four men made their way across the courtyard to the structure that arose from the ground, the big starman paused frequently and turned to stare at the landscape. He noted the low, rounded banks of silvery compounds, with now and again a tree-like growth of sharp-edged mica or other crystalline growth thrusting out of the ground. "Beautiful it is," said Joe, "but in spite of our suits, still hazardous. I wouldn't want to take a walk out there and accidentally break through a crust and drop into a bowl of molten gold or something. These suits can protect us from the super-hot atmosphere on this planet, but I doubt they'd last more than a minute if we tried to go swimming in that river." "Gold doesn't melt at this temperature, Joe," said Mark. "I know, but you know what I mean." As they turned back in the direction they were walking, they saw with a shock that the janitor had removed the top part of his suit and was carrying it under his arm. "Ah, that's better," he said to them all. "Please follow me." He led them along a pathway made of shaped white stones closely fitted together. The janitor was completely humanoid in body type, about 5 feet tall. His skin was yellowish and flawlessly smooth and bore no hair. His hand had 6 fingers, including 2 thumbs on opposite sides. 2 long central fingers of equal length were flanked by 2 fingers about an inch shorter. What appeared to be a water garden lay on both sides of the path as the group approached the archway that led into the building. A moat of white liquid lay in geometrically pleasing swirls around fantastic formations of crystal of many colors. They were placed artfully along shallow streams and tranquil pools. "The white stream is tin," said the janitor. "And here," he stooped down and ran his fingers through a silvery slush, "is cadmium." The pool held the imprint of his fingers for a few seconds before flowing like melting ice cream back to the level. "And this," he reached into a bluish pool and taking up a handful of gel, "is lead. When the temperature is right, it can do wonderful things." He splattered it down onto the stones and it spread quickly, slowed, and then hardened into tendrils. He picked one up, peeling it from the stones as if it were wax. He laughed, then curled the tendril into a spiral and cupped it in his hands. After a moment, he removed one hand to show a small pool of liquid in his palm. With another laugh, he tossed it back into the pool and then turned toward the archway again. Joe looked at the other starmen. "I wonder what they eat here," he said. They followed the janitor into the building and found him hanging up his suit in a storage area. He was dressed in a simple smock that hung from his neck to his knees. The sleeves only went to the middle of his forearm. He turned and faced his guests. For the first time, the starmen saw a member of the first races in his own environment, free of protective clothing. He looked weak, almost fragile. But the humans knew that the appearance was deceptive. This was one of the most ancient of the sentient beings in the galaxy, many eons old. His yellow appearance and bright yellow-orange eyes made them think that he could be the spawn of the stars themselves. "Come," he said, "I will show you the type of tachyon gateway you will most likely find in the chamber of Nexi inside Luxa. We rarely use them for our own travel, as I explained a moment ago, but I will show you how to use them and how to program them. Then I will teach you what the power source inside Luxa is probably like. Once you can identify it, I will show you how to disable it." The first races, when necessary, moved from planet to planet as their suns cooled. The renegade Lucians, however, kept to their original world. Luxa is little more than 2/3 the size of Earth with a small iron moon. They moved it from star to star, never being willing to relinquish anything that was their own, no matter how wasted it had become. Once a place of Edenic beauty, like all the worlds of the first races, it has become as blighted as its denizens. "Would it not be possible for you to accompany us to Luxa and guide us in the work, Janitor?" asked Sip. "Or perhaps disable the power source yourself." "It is not possible, Starman Foster," replied the janitor. "If I were to appear on Luxa even inside my environmental suit, my presence would immediately become known to the Xenobots. The disruption my presence would cause to their sensors would alert them that a member of the First Races had invaded their planet. They would have little trouble in ending my life with violence. Indeed, even if all the surviving members of the First Races invaded Luxa with the aim of defeating the enemy, we would have little effect and would only bring about the annihilation of what remains of our races. It is you, men of Earth, who must go to Luxa and make possible the destruction of the enemy. I will instruct you so that you can achieve this, but it is you who will bring it into being." The janitor led the starmen through another archway, and they found themselves in a spacious room more than 40 feet square with a high dome transparent ceiling. Near the center of the room was what appeared to be an oval picture frame about 6 feet high, with nothing inside it. It touched the floor but had no visible supports. Its frame was made of beveled glass or something very like it. Through it they could see the rest of the room as if the frame were completely empty. The janitor put his hand through the open space and it passed through without any change. Then the janitor touched the frame. The space it contained clouded over and became opaque with the appearance of pewter. "Now try to put your hand through the portal," said the janitor. The starmen stood close to it and peered at the space within the frame. There was no reflection. Tentatively, Mark put out his hand and pressed his fingertips against the substance. He could feel a slight vibration, almost imperceptible, and he could hear a very deep hum. He pressed on it and saw his fingers penetrate about half an inch. "What is it?" he asked. "It is the bridge substance between space and time," replied the janitor. "It has no independent existence, but only appears when the portal is activated. It is like the inside of a hole in 11 dimensions. Mark jerked his hand away. The deep hum he had heard disappeared as if a door had been shut. "Oh, it's quite safe," said the janitor. "It is completely inert, but cannot be wrought. If you were to try to scoop some out, it would disappear as soon as you brought it into our plane of existence. Try it." When Mark hesitated, Zip stepped up and pressed his fingers into the material. He pulled away and then pressed again with his hand in the shape of a claw. He brought his fingers together and then drew the substance out as if he were shaping clay. It stretched into the room, but the instant the globe he held broke free from the portal, it vanished as if it had never existed. "Step back now," said the janitor. He manipulated the side of the portal once again, and the image inside showed their apartment inside Tharsos. "Here is the most advanced tachyon transporter ever known. Now you could step through directly into your quarters inside Ocean," he said. "You would have no sense of movement beyond the step. These are the portal solutions used to travel between the worlds many years ago. You will find many thousands of Nexi like this inside the chamber on Luxa. All of them are dead now and have been for eons, but I will show you how to control them." "Very well, Starman," said the janitor, stepping back from the tachyon transporter. 4 days had passed since the starmen had arrived on the janitor's planet. "Each of you has learned how to operate this nexus, and you have learned how it is powered. From this information, you must trace the power source for the Nexi inside Luxa. When you find the power source, you will be able to locate that part of it that provides the energy for the hypershield. You now know what it looks like, and you are trained in the use of the tools you will need." "The measure of power needed even for this single gate is staggering," said Mark. "What kind of power must the Xenobots have inside their planet to power thousands of them? And how can they be using the same power source to create the hypershield and yet not be able to use the Nexi for tachyon travel?" "Your search will begin in the Chamber of Nexi," said the janitor. "The Xenobots have not been able to find that chamber, for it is deep under the crust of their planet. The power plant must be located far under the crust as well and not far from the nexi. The controls, however, must be on the surface. Why must the power plant be under the crust? Asked Sip. The renegade Lucians turned their entire planet into an energy pool, Starman Foster, said the janitor. Luxa was a hot planet similar to this one, for that is the environment of the first races. But over long ages, the renegades utilized the energy of their planet's inner core, and they drew off energy from its magnetic field. They sacrificed all the natural resources on the surface to construct means to exploit the interior fires. The very life of the planet itself began to ebb and cool. Now it is no more than 120 degrees, a bitterly cold place of steaming methane swamps, contaminated by the waste products of their spoilage. The Great Chamber of Nexi was once a way station to the stars located close to the power plant and removed from the endeavors that ravaged the surface. Now, as best we can guess, it is a place long forgotten by the denizens of that planet. As we suspect has been the case for millennia, the Xenobots are exploiting technology of which they know almost nothing. For a minute or more there was no conversation, then Zip spoke up. Janitor, he began, tentativeness marking his words. Inside his helmet, his brow was furrowed with concentration. Between his sentences, his lips clamped together briefly. You have said that the Lucians were masters of space and time. Is it ever possible to go back in time? No one has ever been able to go back in time, Starman Foster, stated the janitor. Indeed, the first races considered it to be impossible. The nature of the universe makes such travel impossible. Our choices and our actions and their consequences can only be lived with or endured. They cannot be changed or become as if they never had been. What becomes actual must remain. I see, said Zip. He exhaled as if from a deep sigh. It is, however, possible to go forward in time, said the janitor. What? Asked Mark and Joe together. The Lucians knew that a simple way to move into the future at a rate faster than normal would be to travel at very close to the speed of light, at which point time slows down. If one were aboard a ship that moved at a velocity just under the speed of light, then centuries, even millennia, would pass even as one aged only a few years. But since one cannot go back in time, whoever travels forward in time cannot go back. He cannot even send a message. Time can be sped up or slowed or nearly stopped, but its direction cannot be changed. You've got something on your mind, Zip, said Mark. You're not asking out of mere curiosity. I was just wondering what would happen if the Xenobots win. Could we or the first races go back in time and change the outcome? I didn't really think it would be possible. I have prepared for your task to the best of my capabilities, said the janitor. You cannot be made more ready to travel to Luxa than you are now. Do you need to sleep before you step through the portal? I'm tired. Tired with a heaviness of anxiety, confessed Sip, but I don't think I could sleep. I'm exhausted, said Mark. I'd like to sleep before we go. Sip, you can ask your suit to provide you with a sleeping draft. I know, said Sip with a small dismissive gesture. I don't want to sleep by any artificial means. I need my mind clear. Joe spoke up. Sip, you know better than that. We all need rest. We need to be as sharp as we can for this assignment. Let's sleep. Tomorrow, first thing, we make the jump. The red-headed starman nodded wearily. The four men walked outside. The double sun was close to the horizon, but there was no hint of dusk. The dozens of large stars that burned in the sky kept the land bright, and behind them were thousands of others. It's only been 4 days since we arrived here, and already I miss night, said Mark. Enjoy the light while you've got it, advised Joe somberly. I suspect we're going to get all the darkness you can desire just a few hours from now.